The summer heat and little winging feels like a physical weight on Harry Potter's shoulders. Isolated from his friends and haunted by nightmares of Cedric Diggory's death, Harry's frustration builds until it explodes during an argument with his cousin Dudley. When Dudley cruelly mocks Harry's nightmares, tension crackles in the air like electricity before a storm. Then everything changes. The street plunges into unnatural darkness, not just absence of light, but absence of hope itself. Dementors have come to Privet Drive. The soul-sucking creatures glide toward the boys, their rattling breath freezing the summer air. When Dudley panics and punches Harry, causing him to lose his wand, we feel that terrible vulnerability, like having your only lifeline ripped away while drowning. What makes this moment so pivotal is Harry's struggle to produce his Patronus. Unlike previous encounters, Voldemort's voice invades his mind, nearly paralyzing him with doubt. It's only by summoning memories of Ron and Hermione that Harry manages to conjure his silver stag, driving away the Dementor about to perform the soul-destroying kiss on Dudley. The aftermath brings another shock. Mrs. Figg, Harry's seemingly ordinary elderly neighbor, reveals herself as a squib secretly watching over him on Dumbledore's orders. Her presence suggests layers of protection Harry never realized existed, while her fury at Mundungus Fletcher for abandoning his post hints at a larger, organized effort to keep Harry safe. This opening brilliantly establishes the book's central tensions. Harry's isolation, dark forces breaching supposedly safe spaces, and the collapse of boundaries between Harry's school life and summer existence. Nothing, not even a quiet suburban street, remains untouched by the coming conflict. The Ministry of Magic's response to the Dementor attack reveals their shift from protection to persecution. Rather than investigate, they immediately move to expel Harry, showing Fudge's determination to deny Voldemort's return. Harry's hearing before the full Wizengamot turns a simple underage magic case into a show trial. Fudge's aggressive interruptions contrast with Dumbledore's methodical defense. When Umbridge hints at ministry involvement with the Dementors, Dumbledore presents a stark choice. Either the ministry lost control or orchestrated the attack. At Hogwarts, Umbridge's educational decrees gradually erode freedoms through seemingly reasonable restrictions. From banning student groups to controlling teacher communications, she demonstrates how institutional control tightens through incremental changes. Her classroom inspections, marked by her intimidating clipboard, further this agenda. Professor Trelawney's public humiliation shows Umbridge targets not just incompetence, but any deviation from her vision of magical society. Number 12, Grimmauld Place emerges between buildings 11 and 13, a deteriorating mansion serving as the Order of the Phoenix's headquarters, hidden from Muggle eyes and shrouded in darkness. The house fights against change, its cursed artifacts and hostile enchantments, from doxy-infested curtains to an attacking grandfather clock, embodying the Black family's pure-blood prejudices. Here, Sirius Black faces bitter irony, confined by Dumbledore's orders to the childhood home he despises, while the family tapestry, scarred where blood traitors were burned away, reveals the tangled relationships between wizarding families and their deep divisions over blood status. Meanwhile, at Hogwarts, students form Dumbledore's army in the Room of Requirement, mastering defensive magic under Harry's guidance in defiance of Umbridge's inadequate curriculum and the ministry's denial of danger. In a world of propaganda, truth emerges as the most potent weapon. The Daily Prophet's campaign against Harry and Dumbledore demonstrates media weaponization through subtle language like "the boy who lies" and "Dumbledore's growing senility" to sow doubt. The ministry controls both media and personal communications. Umbridge's inspection of mail and the Flu Network shows how authoritarian systems isolate dissidents, while Educational Decree 26 prevents teachers from discussing non-subject matters with students. Harry's Quibbler interview becomes an act of resistance by directly sharing his account of Voldemort's return. The ministry's attempt to ban the magazine backfires as students find creative ways to share it, proving censorship often amplifies suppressed messages. The flood of supportive letters reveals many wizards sought an alternative to the official narrative. Their responses, from belief to apologies for doubting, show how propaganda works best when aligned with existing beliefs and how truth can challenge an entire system. The Department of Mysteries serves as the heart of the wizarding government, a labyrinth exploring existence's deepest questions: time, thought, death, love, and prophecy. Harry's recurring dreams of its corridors create a sense of inevitable movement toward this confrontation. Inside, each room reveals different facets of magical understanding. The Time Room features an endlessly aging hummingbird, while the Chamber of Brains displays consciousness existing beyond its vessel. Most significant is the Death Chamber, with its stone archway and whispering veil, a threshold between worlds. The ensuing battle reveals the practical impact of theoretical magic. Shattered prophecy orbs release ghostly predictions, brain thoughts physically entangle Ron, and the veil becomes the instrument of Sirius's sudden disappearance, a loss made harder by its lack of closure. In the climactic moment, Voldemort's possession of Harry fails when confronted with Harry's raw grief for Sirius. This reveals the book's core truth. Love and grief aren't weaknesses, but powerful forces that dark magic cannot comprehend or withstand. The prophecy, "Neither can live while the other survives," raises questions of fate versus free will. Dumbledore reveals that prophecies only hold power when people choose to act on them. Had Voldemort ignored it, it would have remained meaningless words. The prophecy's ambiguity is telling. It could have meant either Harry or Neville Longbottom. By choosing Harry, the half-blood like himself, over pure-blood Neville, Voldemort created his own nemesis through his fears and prejudices. This knowledge deeply affects Harry. His scar pains worsen, his dreams intensify, and his temper flares. Learning he must kill Voldemort confirms his worst fear. His destiny demands an act against his very nature. Grief permeates the narrative through Harry's nightmares about Cedric and the loss of Sirius Black. The book portrays grief's multiple manifestations, from anger to isolation, as Harry struggles with unprocessed trauma. Characters like Luna Lovegood, who lost her mother, demonstrate different paths through loss. Her belief that loved ones are just lurking out of sight offers Harry a new perspective on death. Similarly, Neville's cherishing of an empty gum wrapper from his mentally absent mother reveals grief's personal nature. Community becomes vital for both healing and resistance. Dumbledore's army unites students across house lines, forming a hope-based alternative to Voldemort's fear-driven followers. The book ends with Harry boarding the Hogwarts Express, still grieving but supported by friends. His walk into the sunlit street suggests the possibility of moving forward while honoring loss.